Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, April 6th, 2022. And as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the Internet, on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that page and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself completely free. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it out, and copy it as often as you'd like. Hopefully, as you're copying it, you're then actually using the worksheet process to fill in the different blanks on the form anytime you've got a negative emotional experience that you'd like to understand specifically how you're creating that emotion, because what we're understanding in this work is that I create all of my emotions internally. Quite the opposite of what my culture teaches me about how people and events outside of me are creating my emotions. In this work, we understand it's always an inside job. And if I create a negative emotional state, I have the option of fighting against it, blaming others, getting into tightness and tension and contraction and my belief that I know that this is wrong and shouldn't be happening and I know better how the world should flow than the flow of life itself. We could do that. We've been trained to do that. There's another option, though. The other option is to take a look inside and ask to be shown how I'm creating my internal experience in that moment of this negative emotion, and what I might do to take another look, undo the negative emotional states and the perception that I'm generating that's creating that negative emotional state, and effectively turn that negative emotional state into part of my guidance system, like a compass or a Geiger counter, to alert me to the fact that I'm not using my mind energy very productively in this moment. I'm using it to create a false picture of life and a false belief that someone or something outside of me is creating this emotion, and I can correct it. Since I'm the one who's creating it, I can create differently. I won't be able to do that with my conscious logical mind. My conscious logical mind can't fix the problems that it creates. But this work continually introduces us to another level of experience, another level of cognition, if you will, another level of insight, intuition, Some would call it grace. Some would call it connection to the divine. Call it what you will. Every one of us has access to it. And that's what this worksheet process is designed to let me tap into. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have either been stepped through that worksheet process or asked clarifying questions about the process or given powerful testimonials about how the use of the process has improved their life. So we hope you do that soon and often. We hope you're among the many who find benefit from these tools. And if you are and you're listening live, you can call in at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1 on your phone. It'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. And I should mention that we had our support group last night, and in the support group last night, they opted for listening to a reading of Lesson 9 in the Way of Mastery. As we're working with the Way of Mastery this year, we're in the middle of going through Lesson 7 for the second time. And where we left off yesterday was at the top of page 89, if you're following along in the Way of Mastery, with the heading, Birthing the Mind of Christ. We just finished talking about the only thing that will trigger you to create a perception that you are small or weak or that you don't have the power to change your current life experience. The only thing that will do that is the energy of contraction, the energy of judgment, the energy of fear. And it told the story about the little shadow cast by the little blade of grass and how silly it is to give that power in your life, to let fear decide your actions, because fear is an error. It's an emotion, an emotional state we experience right after we've generated an error in thought. And in the story, the error in thought amounts to believing that the shadow cast by a little blade of grass is going to rise up and punish me and crush me if I step into my magnificence, if I step into my strength, if I step into birthing the Christ mind. So the next section is titled Birthing the Christ Mind. And the text reads, when your life becomes liberated, and in that I'm not speaking of perfection as you would know it, your life becomes that motivation, that attitude, that declaration, devotion, then perfection will be witnessed through you. And what they're saying here is not that perfection is some idea you have about how things will look when they're perfect. Perfection in this sense is not that the world begins to conform to your belief about how it should be, but rather when you become liberated to go with the flow of life, when you become liberated enough to recognize you're not the doer and the maker and the thinker, when you become committed to observing and witnessing life as it flows through you, you'll begin to see it through the filter of, everything's working out in ways I could never imagine. The flow of life itself is perfect. I will be witnessing the perfection of the flow of life through me, and it will be witnessed by me. And as it comes by and as I experience it, I will bless it. I will stay in the flow. I will observe from that passive childlike curiosity. I will watch my conscious logical mind, my intellectual mind with all the trivialities that have been stuffed into it over the decades, I will watch it judge and constrict, and I will not believe the conscious logical mind or the intellectual mind. I won't go down that path. I will stay in the bliss state, of observing and allowing and trusting and surrendering and embracing all that is, and that's the only way for me to transcend it. The text goes on to say, for the true meaning of perfection is miracle-mindedness, where that which saves time occurs. When your life becomes that, when you no longer have any conflicted commitment in your beingness, you will know exactly what the result of my life was for me, because you will be that. What is that? What that life was being in the flow, allowing, surrendering, keeping my intention focused on the flow of creative energy and what it wants to express, and surrendering to it and asking to be shown, rather than jumping into the intellectual process and evaluating things and judging them and deciding this is good and that's bad and that person should be punished, or I should be punished, and that person should be exalted. Rather than that, to be in the state of moment-to-moment gratitude for existence and the flow of life, and asking to be taught by life in each moment. The next paragraph reads, yes, I know you are worrying. Quote, does that mean that when I really get close, I'm going to have to go through my final initiation of crucifixion? And if I have to do that, will you at least promise me that they'll sterilize the nails? Can I choose the day and the hour? I really don't like to get up too early. Close quote. The text says, you already know what crucifixion is all about. You've done it to yourself a million times in ways far worse than a mere nail driven through the hand that causes a little twinge of pain. Hell is nothing more than the state of being rutted or stuck in the process of crucifying one's self, which is the attempt to murder and destroy what the Creator has created out of love. In other words, every time I reject what's occurring in the flow of life, every time I think I know better than God or light or love or the flow of creation, this is bad, this is wrong, this shouldn't be happening, what I'm doing is what they call here attempting to murder and destroy what creation has provided. And creation is providing the flow of life out of the flow of life and the flow of love and the flow of the creative energy. So the text goes on and says, so stop wasting your energy trying to love God. That will not do it for you. Stop wasting so much energy trying to learn how to love another. That will not do it for you. And for God's sake, please refrain from all attempts to get anyone to believe that you love them. Okay, that's three things I shouldn't do. What should I do? Put the whole of your attention on giving up the patterns of belief from which you have attempted to crucify the true higher self that the Creator made and placed within you as your very awareness of your existence. Put the whole of your attention on giving up any negative belief about yourself or the world around you. All of those beliefs from which you are judging, this is bad, this is wrong, that's good, that's better than me, that's bad, that's worse than me, put your attention on giving up those beliefs and judgments. Because in those beliefs and judgments, if I pour my mind energy into them, I focus on separating myself from the flow of life. It says, learn to love that total higher S self, that capital S self, the truth of yourself. Learn to love yourself beyond all created things. Learn to understand that you are love, that you are as valuable as anything, anyone you will ever encounter. Learn to nurture that higher S self, that energy of creation, which was given to you to experience, learn to cultivate within that higher S self only that which speaks of joy and truth. Learn to cultivate within yourself only those thoughts and beliefs and energies which speak of joy and truth, which delight with dancing and playing in the kingdom, which appreciate that the life that is yours as you awaken each moment, each morning, each moment during the day, nurture those thoughts, those filters you can choose which speak of joy and truth, and that let you delight with being at play in the kingdom, so that your words and your actions and your very presence always uplift another. So that when another person walks into the room in which you're sitting or standing or moving, they feel a breath of fresh air hit them, even if you've not lifted a finger. Just by you sitting in the conscious awareness of your presence as the extension of love in form. The last paragraph on that page reads, as long as there is a trace of energy within you in which you are striving for anything, striving to be love, striving to know God. So we've been through this at different times in these lessons already. What they're asking us to do in place of striving, our culture teaches us to strive. What they're asking us to do in this work is learn to be in allowance and surrender. But that paragraph reads, as long as there's any trace of energy within you that you are striving to get from another perceived thing or object around you, anything that you're sure that you lack inside yourself, if that energy of striving is in you, you cannot know that you, as the higher S self, are the energy of creation and love. You can't know yourself as love. You can't have and extend that love for yourself to others. And you cannot experience freedom. The last line on that page says, happiness is an inside job. The next page reads, okay, so then what happens? You finally get it right and you decide, quote, all right, what has that little shadow of fear been doing in my life? Well, let's take care of that one. I was talking about this on Saturday. I had one come up. Here's my fear. I'm not going to be enough. I'm never going to be able to satisfy everybody that I love. I'm never going to be able to get all this work done in a short period of time or whatever period of time I'm assuming. Okay, I'll take care of that one. I'll release that one. I'll do some worksheets and EFT tapping and breathing on that one. I'll do a mind shifter about it's safe and healing for me to know I'm always enough. I'll do that writing for 2 or 3 hours and see what bubbles up out of my unconscious. I'll do the worksheets on that. Okay, and then what happens? Well, here's another one. I have all this fear about how my life is going to go when my mother's no longer here. Okay, I'll take care of that one. And then the text reads, how many blades of grass and how many shadows are there within this being that can seem to be overlaid upon the self? And does it matter? Do I really care how many times I have to do the process of forgiveness? Do I really care how many times I have to return my focus of my conscious awareness to my true nature as love? I won't really care how long I have to do that because every step of that process, I'm busy birthing the mind of Christ. And every time I do it, there's another realization of the shimmering radiance within me and within everyone and everything I look at. What happens when that really occurs? First, and then it got a couple hyphens in here to spread this out, and listen well. It separates it out in the text. And listen well. The first thing that happens when you finally arrive and understand that your fear is not something that you should follow to or attach to or believe in, and as soon as you don't believe in it, it has no effect on you, and you can remove those shadows and those fears and those beliefs, what's the first thing that happens? Nothing will be unacceptable to you. You will move into acceptance of everything that unfolds in life. And this rankles the conscious logical mind. We can't accept what's happening in America today with this political party being directly opposed to us. We have to stand up and fight for it. We can't be accepting of what's happening over in Ukraine. We can't be accepting of those people in Ukraine trying to pretend that there's Russians doing something mean to them or vice versa. It doesn't matter which side of the equation you pick. The conscious logical mind jumps up and says, I will not accept this or that. This is bad. That is wrong. This is good. This is how life should be. And that's what the conscious logical mind does. It just does it automatically. Guy Finley calls it that mechanical level of consciousness. It just spins and goes nowhere. It is constantly evaluating and beating myself up or helping me beat somebody else up, verbally, emotionally, sometimes even physically. And yet, all the great philosophers, all the practical psychologists will tell you, you cannot deal with a problem that you won't admit and own and accept. I can't do anything to be a positive influence on this parent yelling at this child in the middle of the department store I'm in if I won't accept and acknowledge all aspects of what's happening. I can't deal directly with what's going on in the Ukraine if I live in the Ukraine or I can't deal with it if I won't accept it first. I can't do one of the most important things for me to do here, you know, several continents away, which is send loving energy, be the presence of love, pray, meditate, send blessings, whatever you want to call it, be in alignment with the most loving and productive energy. I can't do that if I'm busy judging it as bad or wrong and pulling myself out of the flow and wishing, you know, that so-and-so would die and so-and-so would be crushed and so-and-so would be blown up. I'm just adding negative energy to the field. And there's already plenty of negative energy in the field when people are having a war and blowing people up, et cetera. The text goes on and it reads, all right, but as soon as you get to this point where you say nothing is unacceptable to you, the mind jumps up and says, wait a minute, does that mean if somebody's not a vegetarian that they could still be loved? Does that mean somebody I vote for, that if somebody votes for somebody that I'm sure is the wrong guy, that person's not insane for voting for them? I could still love that person if they vote for somebody I don't like? Does that mean that someone who seeks power and therefore creates a war and kills 5,000 or 500,000 women and children, that I could still look upon them and not have my love be disturbed? Does it mean that whatever arises within this temporary world is really, truly, literally not a problem for me any longer? That nothing is unacceptable? That I would be able to tap into my awareness of my true nature as love and extend that in every moment, even if someone's doing an atrocity in front of me? Yes, that's what it means. And immediately it says, after the yes, it says, it does not mean you condone it. It means it's no longer acceptable. Because what you cannot accept, you will judge. And every judgment is the attempt to murder what you've decided has no right to be. So here's this atrocity going on, and you think it's an atrocity because one person's picking up a gun and shooting it at somebody else. And what you want to do is murder the guy with the gun. Murder the person with the gun, male or female, young or old, thin or fat, rich or poor. You don't care. You know that they're wrong and they picked up a gun and shot somebody, so you want to destroy them. And in that moment, you are not consciously connected to your true nature as love, and you're not consciously extending that and adding the energy to that resonance of love. The text goes on and says, judgment is the opposite of forgiveness. Judgment lives on the side of the fence with fear. Fear lives on the side of the fence. It lives on the side of the fence with fear. So judgment is the same as fear. And forgiveness lives on the side of the fence with love. The dismantling of any perception that leaves me feeling fear, that lives on the side of the fence with love. And only the conscious, active presence of love can heal this world. Dr. Michael Rice would say the total, perfect, conscious, active presence of love can heal this world. Imagine then living in a state of being in which literally nothing was unacceptable to you because you knew that the source of your true being was far beyond the limitations of anything created in time and space. What if you knew that not even death, which has been created out of the contraction known as fear, even death is not unacceptable? I say unto you, if you will choose to trust me, I will show you the way to peace. I will wait for your reply, as I can do nothing to take from you the freedom required to become wholly committed to allowing Christ to be birthed, where once a useless illusion reigned in your mind. I will show you how to become the being and to be aware of your truth as the being out of which all of creation is arising, so that you will know the truth that sets you free. And in that moment, when we talk about this, that will raise up within you the most fundamental of fears possible. What is that? It's the last to be overcome. It's the fear of death. For when you are confronted by the capital T truth, you know that everything you have sought to create as a substitute for the capital T truth must fade away, must die, must disperse like a faint mist before a stiff breeze on a sunny day. That is why I said that the last to be overcome shall be death. And they clarify here, that's the whole quote, the last to be overcome shall be death. And what they're clarifying here is, it's the fear of death that will be overcome. You allow death so that the Christ mind can live. You allow death of your sense of self, of your attachment to your physical belongings. You allow the death of your attachment to having people see you as a loving person or a great spiritual teacher or the world's best parent or whatever. Death is allowed so that the Christ might live. The text goes on to say, understand well, there is no one, and there shall not at any time be anyone who reads these words to whom I have not given this promise. I will show you the way to the truth that is true always and that sets you free. I'll show you the way there. But only you can make the decision to bring the whole of your being to that journey. And all it requires is what you call a smidgen of willingness. A smidgen of willingness is all it takes. I know the way home because I have completed the journey. This is the Christ consciousness. This is the Yeshua talking. I know the way home because I've completed the journey and I will show you the way. And then again, and this is, you know, in my copy of the book, this is boldly highlighted several different ways. Quote, with every word that I utter, my one intent is to reveal to you the place within you that is the presence of the love that you seek. You are what you're looking for. Your consciousness, your ability to be aware that you're hearing these words, your ability to be awake and aware as experiencing life in this moment, that is the creative energy that we call love. You're the presence of love that you seek. The text goes on. What if you chose to actually commit yourself to considering what I'm sharing? What if you chose to return to the innocence of a child as you contemplated what that would mean for your life? Rest assured, when the journey to the kingdom is completed, the journey within the kingdom begins anew. The bliss, the wisdom, the creativity, the laughter, the friendships, the family, the joy, the serenity, and the peace that have been for the most part seen as an impossible dream, all of those will become your most ordinary state of being. And yet, none of it can occur through any power that can move through me as Yeshua. It must come through you. The text says, I can guide you, I can show you the way, and I can walk beside you on the way that you have chosen. But you must choose it. At times I can give you my strength until yours is as certain as mine. I can give you that strength by carrying you for a time. But ultimately you must demand that I put you down so that your feet touch the soil of the kingdom of heaven and that you walk under your own strength, your own choice, your own certainty. You walk beside me and all of our brothers and sisters. You will indeed find that in that day and in that hour, as often as you ask it of me, I will turn and ask you, hey, what do you think we could do? What would you like to create with me today? What's your highest guidance for where we direct our mind energy? And then indeed we are as brother and brother, sister and brother, friends, dancing and playing in the kingdom that has been prepared for us by the Creator. And to bring us back to this story and remind us, the only thing that blocks us from being there dancing in the kingdom as friends is one little shadow cast by a tiny blade of grass, that giving into fear and what fear would tell me. And that's the only thing that prevents you from coming wholly and completely in each new present moment to exactly where Yeshua is, exactly where Jesus is, exactly where the Holy Spirit is. You're giving power to the energy of fear. Text says, if you tarry yet a little longer, it's all right. You cannot prevent me from knowing the truth about you and from loving you. When you are in love, capital L love, when you are so immersed in simply loving, simply seeing the truth of love, is it not true that you have no sense of time at all? There's no sense of any effective disturbance of your peace. You are just swaying to the music, so to speak. You're loving, and your wholeness grows even more holy. Therefore, love one another. Extend the love that you are to everyone, just as I have done with you. For the Creator has first loved me that I might show you the truth of the love that is the reality of your being. I will not cease in doing this, regardless of how long you choose to tarry. For love is, indeed, patient and kind. Love sees clearly and perceives accurately. Love is not deluded. Love does not allow delusion. Love embraces all things. Love trusts all things, and love allows all things. Love knows perfectly well where it is going, and it never ceases in that journey until every blade of grass is revealed and released from casting shadows, and the whole of creation is returned to the heart of the Creator. Learn to love your capital S self, and then cry out to the world, quote, I and my Father are one. That is the soil from which I move and live and have my being. So be it, close quote. Always remember that the Creator looked upon his holy creation and said, behold, it is very good. That goodness has a name, and it is yours. Behold, you, life, all of creation, is just as it should be. That light deserves to shine. The doorway stands before you. The question is, will you open it through the power of your choice? For what you experience will reveal to you what choice that you've made on this day. Beloved and holy friends, may peace be with you always, and may the truth that is true always shine within your hearts and minds throughout all ages. Remember, there is a perfectly good reason why I keep saying time and again, I am with you always. And that is because everything in creation is connected to everything in creation. You cannot be separate from your Creator. You can only create the dream of separation. The Christ mind is with you always. Yeshua is with you always. Countless sparks of light that we call entities are with you always. And we are creating our experience of life by the thoughts we choose and then pour our mind energy into. So each and every one of us can have a flow of thoughts, just like a carousel that spins, like a kaleidoscope that someone spins and it just keeps changing images. Our job is not to control our thoughts in that way. Our job is to be discerning about which ones we choose to pour our attachment energy into, our emotional energy into. And Lesson 8 talks about that in the parable of dropping pebbles into the pool of awareness. Imagine that there is a still, clear pool, and the top of it is completely calm. And then you take a pebble and drop it in, and it creates this splash and these ripples that extend out from where the pebble landed in the water. And those ripples or waves extend out until they hit the shore, and then they bounce back, and they come back to the point of origin. And this parable says, every thought that we choose and pour mind energy into or emotional energy into is busy creating our tomorrows, because the energy is going to ripple off of that and come back to us. Lesson 8 is titled Dropping Pebbles into the Pool of Awareness. The text reads, as always, I come forth as your equal. I come forth to abide with you and to walk with you, to communicate with you. From that mind, capital M, mind, and that heart, capital H, heart, which are eternally, we are sharing eternally. That mind which is alone the reality of our shared offspringship, sonship. We come from this creative energy, this one mind. And it gives rise to our shared experience. As always, I come forth in joy and also with humility, being willing to see, look for and see the highest and best in you, and to choose to cooperate only with that. For I cannot join with anyone unless they provide the space within their consciousness and they bid me to enter therein. This is that message that comes when Guy Finley says there's one cosmic curriculum, and the only purpose of the curriculum is to educate the student, the soul, the mind, to the presence of the wisdom and the intelligence that created the curriculum. That's the only curriculum there is. That's the only thing there is to learn in life of any value. You can't choose another lesson, another curriculum. You do get to choose whether or not you delay learning that lesson. Right? This is that last sentence. For I cannot join with anyone unless they provide the space within their consciousness. They choose to welcome me in. Teach me. I'm going to stay open. I'm going to ask to be shown. And if I put myself in that space, I can learn. I can be taught. If I say, nope, I know what's right and what's wrong. I go to this church and we believe this and we believe that. Then I cannot learn because I'm not open. I am not asking to be shown. I am not being given. I'm not giving the space within myself where someone or something can come in and add to my light, my experience, my knowledge base. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness. You can say, yes, I see the doorway to heaven is in front of me, but I'm not going there. I'm not giving up all of my pride and my sense of accomplishment and my thought that I'm right and she's wrong and he's wrong and they're wrong. Choice, 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 over and over and over again with the Way of Mastery. Hundreds of times in these pages, and there's only, you know, about 400 pages in this book, maybe a little less than 400. Hundreds of times, choice, choose. You choose. You have the power of choice. You are the one creating your experience. The text goes on here in the beginning of page 93. Therefore, understand well that when I come to abide with you, I come with a humility born of the recognition of the great mystery that has given you your existence. That mystery I have called Abba, Father, Father, Mother, God, Creator. Why is the question? Because you have not come forth from some mechanical, unthinking force. You have come forth from pure intelligence. You have come forth from pure love. You have come forth from a source beyond all comprehension. You have come forth from the radiance of a light so bright that the world cannot see it or contain it. You have come forth from that which alone is eternally real. Because you have come forth from it, you are one with it always. That means you abide in a relationship, created to creator, offspring or child to parent, and that relationship is so intimate. It is a bond that is so deep that it cannot be broken at any time. As a wave that arises from an ocean cannot be separated from the ocean itself, so too, in each and every moment in your experience, do you abide in a union which is so powerful, so mysterious, so intimate, and immediate that your mind cannot comprehend it. This union connects you as the created with the mystery beyond comprehension that contains every drop of wisdom and intelligence which was necessary to create consciousness itself. Consciousness, the power to be aware, the power to choose, consciousness is what you truly are. If this source, if this mystery can birth the most fundamental aspect of creation, does it not deserve to be called something special like Abba or Father or that which creates like unto itself? Can you then begin to feel, to know, not just as an intellectual idea, but feel as a lived reality, a knowingness deep in your bones, that if you are aware in this very moment, it is because you are one with the source of all creation, and you cannot be separated from it in any way or at any time. Again, the conscious logical mind will start to wrestle with this. Give it some Oreo cookies and milk and put it over at the kiddie table. Just breathe and soften and let life experience guide you in a different direction. That paragraph again reads, if this source, this mystery, can birth this most fundamental aspect of creation, which is consciousness, which is what you truly are, does not the source of that, that can create that, doesn't it deserve a special name? Shouldn't we call it Abba, Father, Mother, Creator, that which creates like unto itself? Can you then begin to feel palpably at a level that's more connected than your tactile sense of touch? Feel deep within yourself to know, not just as an intellectual idea, but as a lived experience, a lived reality, a knowingness, that if you are aware, awake and aware of anything in this moment, it's because you're one with the source of all creation, and you cannot be separated from it in any way at any time. Fear, as we've said many times, is like a contraction. Again, if you were to imagine a wave arising from the ocean and then going into contraction because it thinks it's separated from its source, that contraction literally squeezes the life, the very flowing waters, out of that wave. Could that wave possibly continue when its very life force has been squeezed from it? Does it not then become mere drops of water fading from view only to dissolve back into the ocean itself? Its radiance lost, never to be seen again? If it were possible for the wave of your consciousness to truly have its life force squeezed out of it, then you too would fade away as droplets returning to the ocean, never to be remembered or seen again. Now that would be death. Listen well, the text says. Listen well. That would be death. And yet, in reality, you are alive always. Even when you have identified yourself with the great distraction that fear is, your fears have never been able to squeeze out of you the great life force, the great reality, the great gift of awareness. You have, therefore, never ceased to be. There has never been a time that you have not existed, and there will never be a time when you will cease to be. This is why it said in the previous lesson, when you awaken in this way, you will experience the thought and the emotional energy of fear, and yet you will not have fear about the fear. You won't believe the fear. You won't let the fear tell you what to do in the next moment. You will just witness the flow of that energy and chuckle and laugh playfully. Ah, there's that thought again, that if I speak my truth, if I step into healing, if I extend love to this person who's attacking me and telling me how horrible I am, if I just stay focused on my conscious awareness as love and I refuse to follow what fear is telling me in this moment, I will be just fine. I can watch the fear. I can feel the emotion of fear. I can breathe and soften and just let it go. Because I'm arising from this energy of creation. I'm a product of the energy of creation. My ability to be aware is the gift of life itself. And I need do nothing. And I need fear nothing. I do not need to listen to what fear tells me. If I listen to what fear tells me, I enter the dream of separation. I contract away from the flow of life. The text goes on and says, "You are therefore very much like a wave that has begun to arise out of an unseen ocean, and as it gains momentum, it moves across the surface of the planet. Like the wave, you are in continual movement." Moving where? "Into a forever extension of your awareness itself. Into a forever extension of whatever you choose to pick up along the way and make a part of yourself, capital S self. Into a forever extension that will carry you into the experience or the fruits of the very thoughts you have held on to as your own. Therefore, understand this quite well. Right now, in this lived moment, wherever you are, whatever you are experiencing, all that you see, all that you feel, all that you know, all that you seek to avoid, and all of the things you value and devalue, all things are contained within your awareness. For if they are not found there, they do not exist for you." This is a pretty deep thought. "Therefore, understand well, right now, in this lived moment, wherever you are, whatever you are experiencing, all that you see, all that you feel, all that you know, all that you seek to avoid, all of the things you value and devalue, all things are contained within your awareness. For if they're not found within your awareness, they do not exist for you." That is a powerful statement. That is how it is true in the first lesson on page 5, where they give the first axiom, and it says, please, the beginning of awakening is to just allow this thought into your consciousness. Nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your choice. Last night in the support group, we had one of our members have a deep realization about that. For the first time, despite hearing this dozens of times, she finally had the realization, oh my gosh, this book, these teachings aren't telling me I created the tornado that came in and wiped out in the tornado they call Katrina, and that, you know, wiped out my cousins, or that I'm not creating this devastating loss in my life. I'm not creating this getting fired from this job. I'm creating the impact of that on me by the thoughts I choose, the interpretation I choose, and pour my mind energy into, it's the filter I put on it that I'm looking at that outside event through that filter. That's what's creating my experience. If the things I'm aware of are the only things that create my experience of life, that's really important to know. Everything I become aware of becomes potentially part of what I use to construct my experience of life in the moment. The next paragraph reads, therefore, look upon that which resides within your awareness, within your consciousness. What are the things that you know that you know? What are the things that you would avoid? What are the feelings that you have not explored? What are the objects, the people, the places, the values that you strive for that seem to thrill even the cells of your body? What is the body itself, if not that which arises within your consciousness? I can't even begin to tell you the number of people that I've had in sessions who come in with physical aches and pains, some of which they've had for years and decades. And when they are introduced to what they're doing with their mind energy, how they're interpreting this or that, how they're driving their life from fear or anger or hurt or sadness, and they open up their willingness to explore the connection between those energies that they value and hold on to and what they're experiencing physically in their body, how they leave and they release their attachment to those beliefs, and they stop experiencing the tensions, the pains, the fears, the rashes, the disruptions. I just had somebody in my office yesterday, and he's in his late 20s, and he's still free of back pain. He's still amazed at the shift that's taken. He's still... this is months now where he hasn't taken any antacids. And for the first couple of months, he didn't take the antacids, which he'd been taking for years. And he was convinced this is just a thing that runs in the family. His dad had to do it. His sister has had to have surgery for gastric problems and all of this. And he was thinking someday he's going to have surgery. And he was living on antacids over the counter, and the doctor is trying to tell him, you need to start taking this prescription antacid. And we talked about some of the emotional energies that might be related to that. He looked it up in a Louise Hay book and said, oh my God, fear is related to this. He said, my father is the most fearful person I know, and my sister isn't far behind. And as soon as he had that realization, he quit taking the antacids, and he went for about a month, and he was amazed that even though he had some heartburn from time to time, it dissipated when he just talked to it and did some EFT tapping, figured out what goal he was holding on that wasn't getting met, and canceled the goal. He came in yesterday and reported it's now been about 3 months where not only is he not taking any antacids, now he's changed what he's eaten to be healthier, and he hasn't had any acid reflux. He hasn't had any heartburn. He hasn't even had the physical discomfort. So as people wake up to the connection between what they're experiencing in life at all levels and what they're choosing to pour their mind energy into, they recreate their experience of life. So that takes us to the end of our time, and I see that Jeannie Rice has just joined on the switchboard, so I will thank you all for being here, remind you that we'll have a support group again tomorrow night. I'll leave us with the thought that we come from love, we're made of the stuff we call love, we actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Tim.
Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Wednesday, April the 6th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And a couple things while we're waiting on Michael to get in. One, if you go to the website and you click on schedules, you'll see several things. You'll see the codependence to interdependence self-study intensive. You'll see the Mindshifter Still Point Breathing monthly membership information. You'll see the Global Online Book Club. And so you can click on one of those, and under each one gives you all the details. And this coming Saturday, April the 9th, is our next Still Point Breathing. And then we follow it up with Tuesday, April the 12th, with a two-hour support session. And so that information is out there. If you'd like to join us, please do. Give us a line. Let us know. Get you registered. And we'd love to have you. It's a small group, but it's a powerful group. And we appreciate everybody that's being part of that. Then the Global Book Club, the next time that Michael will be with the club is not tomorrow, but next Thursday, April 14th, and it's 3:30 Eastern Time, and that's 8:30 p.m. London Time, and it's called Hear My Voice Book Club, and they're right now going through the Why Is This Happening to Me Again. Last week, Michael went through step-by-step the worksheet that is actually in the book. If you click on the link that says Global Online Book Club and scroll down through there, you'll find first the link that you need to join it, the Zoom link and the password, the meeting code, all of that. And then if you scroll on down a little bit, there are updates. So the first time that he was with the club was March the 3rd, and they did not record that session. But then I've got the next two recordings on the website. So for March the 24th and March the 31st. You can click those links, use the passcode that I've got listed for each one, and you'll be able to listen to what you've missed already. And so please think about joining us for some of these things. You know, we can't go on this path alone. And we're developing some awesome communities of people that are like-minded and wanting to do the work. So you've got support out there. You just need to take it. Welcome, Michael.
And to add to that, welcome everybody, but to add to that, it's about doing the work. You know, I've been watching Facebook posts, for instance, on Course in Miracles, and virtually everybody talks about doing the lessons, reading the workbook, but I almost never hear anybody say a word about engaging in forgiveness. And so whatever you're about doing, whether it's this work or Course in Miracles or, you know, whatever the study is, I don't care if it's, you know, obscure, some religious thing from thousands of years ago or some new thing that somebody started yesterday or whatever it is, don't study it. Stop studying. Do the work of forgiveness. You know, there's a powerful line in Course in Miracles that says, "The truth cannot be spoken in words." So let's say that you acquire all the learning and all the books of the world. Everything that's ever written, you've read every word and you can repeat every word of it verbatim. Will you have the truth in front of you? Nope. Not going to happen. Truth is an experience that comes from living life free of the blocks to the presence of love. The blocks to the presence of love are hostility and fear. That's simple. Fear, the underlying cause of pain. Hostility, the anesthetic the drug people use to cover up. Now, you can read and read and read and read and read and study and study and study. Again, everything in the world. And it won't do one thing to remove from your mind the generational patterns and or the personal or cultural patterns that you've acquired based in hostility or fear. And what forgiveness does is it collapses the output of the mind, and that's the most precious you could possibly have. The secrets are not hidden in the mind, they're hidden by the mind. And to heal, you've got to be out of your mind. Studying do. It just reinforces, oh, I have this database. Well, if you got a database that's X in size and you're having trouble functioning as love, the database is the inertia that prevents you from experiencing who you are as love. If you quintuple that database, if you read and study and you make it so much bigger, you just made the anchor weight that you need to escape from that much larger. So just like you treat your computer, you know, you wouldn't turn your life over to your computer to run for you. If you want information from your computer, you go and get information from your computer. It's serving its purpose. If you want information from your mind, go and get information from your mind. But if you let it run you, and you're trying to study your way out of that, it's not going to happen. So the aim of the course, and it's brilliant and it's genius, and sadly, and I'm just saying this from my personal experience, and if you know anybody who's discovered it, I'd love to touch in with them. I'd love to talk to them because there are things I could learn from them. But I have not met one person yet engaged in the Course in Miracles that is doing forgiveness work or even knows what it is. That's been my experience. And people come up with volumes and volumes and volumes of words to try to explain and have an experience, but you don't get an experience except for the volumes and volumes and volumes of words. That does not open the space for being out of your mind, experiencing the truth of who you are and what life is directly, rather than through the mind. So the person who's experiencing life through their minds only and has no direct experience from being the person who sits in front of their computers 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and believes that that's life. And it's not life. And you don't get life through words. Now, words, if you give them a power they don't have, and that's what most people do, oh, see, these words are going to explain the truth to me. Words aren't going to explain the truth to you. Words, the limit of their capacity is that they can show you a pathway, a set of tools that if you use them will take you to an experience. But if you talk about them, if all you do is study them, it's not going to happen. The result that we're searching for is not going to happen. The requirement is to actually engage in the process of forgiveness. And as you do that, things change. Now, again, Yeshua says the power of life and death is in your words. Absolutely. No question. But that's not where life exists. Control mechanism, but what we're looking to do is to get past the control mechanism, get free of that which provides a false experience of life, and have the direct actual experience that we're designed for. So that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to acquire a set of tools. Yes, we're using words for a very important function. They can teach us what the tools are. They can show us how to use the tools. They can guide us in the direction of the tools. Can they give us the experience? Not if you've got every word ever written stored in your mind. Are you going to have the experience that those words are pointing toward? So we're here to support and move forward into the direct experience of what the court is about. If you go to lesson 164, graph 8, it says this: open a curtain in your practicing by merely letting go all the things you think you want, your trifling treasures put away, and leave a clean and open space within your mind for love to come. That's lesson 164 in the course. There is an exact, precise, specific definition of how to do forgiveness, pointed in that direction by words. But I've never met anybody who had the brain cells to recognize what those words said. I didn't recognize them when I first read them until I worked with the first century Aramaic words that pointed toward how forgiveness works and understood them from there. And once you do that, then a whole different process happens. Now, instead of filling the problem with more ammunition, with more content, with forgiveness, you're emptying it of content. You're removing what never belonged. So that's what we're here to offer support in doing. There's a great, you know, for me, and you've heard me say this before, but it fits here, the two most meaningful passages in the Course in Miracles of all the years I've worked with, and it's been, I don't even know, 36, 7, 8 years, I'm not even sure now. And these two paragraphs help me to clarify that. So when we're confused by the fact that we're trying to use words for a purpose they can't fulfill, we're in trouble. We're trying to understand truth through the use of words rather than through forgiveness, rather than removing what doesn't belong. The Course says at one point, you need not seek for love, you need only seek, find, and I'll add, and release the barriers you built within yourself against it. So the Course is not an effort to tell us what it, you know, what the answer is or what it looks like. Here's what it says: a theoretical foundation such as the text provides. So the text is acknowledging that the words in the text are nothing but a theoretical foundation. So a theoretical foundation such as the text provides is necessary as a framework to make the exercises in the workbook meaningful. Yet it is doing the exercises that will make the goal of the Course possible. The Course is using words from the world, and it talks about the words that the world of darkness use. And the idea is you go back and you use those words for a truly useful purpose in the journey toward the experience. So for me, there are two paragraphs in the Course that just profoundly impacted me. In fact, these two paragraphs, and I have no measure of the time involved, but when I first came across them, the only two paragraphs in the Course that when I would read them, I would instantly go into an altered state of mind. I mean, literally go into a totally and completely altered state. And that went on, I'm not even sure how long, months. I'd go back and read it, and bingo, I'd be in this altered state. Bingo, I'd be in this altered state. Bingo, I'd be there. And then one day I opened the book and read the words, and they were just words on the page again. But what they were doing was opening me to an experience, which I now realize is the direct experience of being without reference to the mind. So here are the two paragraphs. I'm actually not sure what page you're on of the Course, but you can Google them and it'll come up. It would indeed be strange if you were asked to go beyond all symbols of the world, that is words. You remember there's an actual experience, and then we use a symbol to represent the experience. I have a house in front of me. There it is. It's an experience. I use a word to describe it. I don't have a house now. I just have a word that's a symbol for the experience. if you string trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of symbols together, you still don't have the thing itself. No matter how many times they say house, I don't have a house. I have a symbol of a building in which I can live, raise a family, create a home, and do all sorts. So this passage says it would indeed be strange if you were asked to go beyond all symbols of the world, words, forgetting them forever, yet we're asked to take a teaching function. You have need to use the symbols of the world well, but be you not deceived by them as well. They do not stand for anything at all. Whew. All they are symbols that call an experience to mind, but you can't get the experience through the symbols. So they do not stand for anything at all, and in your practicing, it is this thought that will release you from them. They become but means by which you can communicate in ways the world can understand, but which you recognize is not the unity where true communication can be found. Second paragraph. Thus what you need are intervals each day in which the learning of the world becomes a transitory phase. And I'd offer, you know, that's the radio show. Having that hour a day is that interval in which you step out of the mass insanity that runs most of the world. So you need our intervals each day in which the learning of the world becomes a transitory phase, a prison house from which you go into the sunlight and forget the darkness. Here you understand the word, the name which the Creator has given you, the one identity which all things share, the one acknowledgement of what is true, and then step back to darkness. Not because you think it real, but only to proclaim its unreality in terms which still have meaning in the world that darkness rules. I can hear that. That's so powerful. You step back to darkness, not because you think it real, but only to proclaim its unreality in terms which still have meaning in the world that darkness rules. So you'll notice if you go back over the last 11 years of listening to the radio show, and somebody calls in with an issue, a challenge, a question, they've got a reality going on that has them stuck in pain, we use words. But we're not using words to help them to pretend that their pain or their trauma is real, that that experience is real. We'll use those very symbols to proclaim, that's not the truth. I got it. So you're in hostility. And you think the hostility was created by Bill. Bill made me so angry. And so I'm going to support you by processing through that and telling you Bill didn't make you angry. You have anger in you, and the reason you have anger in you is because there's anger in you. And the reason Bill can bring it up is because he's got the energy that can trigger it. But the experience of believing it's Bill's is unreal. It's not true. And so we want to proclaim the unreality, and if you listen to all 11 years, you look, listen to every conversation we've had, it's all about, so notice how that which you think is the cause of your pain isn't the truth. That's every processing session we've ever done. And when you throw the mind out, you have a direct experience of being. And that's the whole process of forgiveness. So you use words not because you think they're real, but only to proclaim their unreality in terms which still have meaning in that world that darkness rules. And that's what we're here to let loose of, is that world of darkness. And to be able to stand in a space where the mind is quiet. And instead of experiencing yourself as a picture in your mind, or thoughts in your mind, or someone that's good or bad or accomplished or not accomplished or stupid or smart or healthy or, you know, happily married or in a miserable marriage, instead of experiencing yourself as any of that mind chatter and that mind stuff, you choose to be out of your mind and you stand in a state of being. And from being, you create your life. And if you step forward in creation, and what you create does not support being, there's your next piece of forgiveness work, to dissolve which never meant to be in your mind. So if this is fitting and making sense, a good video to go and watch on our YouTube channel. And to get to that, if you just go to whyagain.org, that's our website, and you'll see on the page there are the social media links. Go to YouTube, or you can go directly to YouTube and just type in Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-R-Y-C-E. There are dozens of free videos there. But in the context of this conversation, there's a, I think it's 32 minutes, there's a video called What is the World? Now, my offering would be you could breathe and watch that video 100 times. If you're in some kind of pain or trauma and you breathe and watch that video, the words in it will give you the tools with which you will free yourself of that pain and trauma if you use them, if you put them to work. Now, here's the how-to. You fill in the blanks. Take the worksheet, you fill in the blanks. You can go to our website. You can do the worksheet right there live on the website. You can download and print them to your printer so you've got the worksheets you can work on. Or if you haven't done it yet, go to your app store and download the world's only forgiveness app. And you do that by typing in your search bar in your app store, Heartland, one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, second word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. You'd be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. Download it, start to use the tool. The whole function is to collapse everything from the last 1,000 generations in your bloodline. And if you think you should be finished in a week, I invite you to just recognize that if you do the numbers, in just 30 generations of your bloodline, there are over 1.6 billion people in your genes. That means that literally there are the voices, there are the experiences, there are the pains, the traumas, the upsets, the wonderment, the skills, and the capacities of 1.6 billion people that went before you. If voices come out of that 1.6 billion people in your bloodline that are based in hostility or fear, those voices will tend to keep you out of the direct experience of yourself as love. And the way to go back to that experience is to remove the impact of those voices. And that's what forgiveness says. So when you download the app, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, there are two different versions of the worksheet. Here's how you do forgiveness. Make that a part of your practice. This thing of study. Make your practice forgiveness. That's what the whole process of the course is about. And that's what the whole process of this work is about. That's what we're here to support. Remove what is not you. Now, there's that story about Michelangelo with this statue of David. And an amazed admirer looks at that statue and says to Michelangelo, "How did you do that? That's so magnificent." And Michelangelo replied, "David was in there all the time. All I did was took my hammer and chisel and removed what wasn't him." The truth about you, no matter how covered up it is by, you know, power person messages of you're not good enough, you'll never be good enough, you'll always fail, you'll always do it wrong, you're always, no matter how many of those messages there are, take out your hammer and chisel, that's the forgiveness worksheet, and start chipping away at it. And as you do a particularly big piece of emotional work, put your hand in the absent, because that will chip away at the energy on a physiological level and start to remove the patterns that never belonged. And we're here to help to clarify every question that could possibly come up with the mind and utilize the words of darkness, not because we think they're real, but only to proclaim their unreality in terms of still have meaning. I understand trauma has been perhaps your experience. And if it has, then your work will be to undo trauma. And there is a power in you. In the ancient Aramaic we could use the word super processor, that there was an actual feminine elemental force in you that, quote, literally undoes the effects of your errors and teaches you the truth. Now, you've got to be listening for that voice. If your mind is screaming in pain and rage and generational unresolved hatred and fear and family loss and murder and insanity and, you know, death, and if that mind is screaming all that stuff, then the still small voice of being will not, it's there, it's never left, but it won't be heard. It'll only be heard when you make it number one goal to move in the direction of that and listening to that. And there is a power in you, literally a feminine elemental force that in Aramaic was called Ruach HaKodesh, that when you set her loose, will undo the effects of your errors and teach you the truth. And I mean teach you the truth. Will literally. There's the real and the only teacher right there inside of you. It's not me. It's not Dr. Tim. It's not Jeannie. It's not, you know, anybody that you've ever admired. The real teacher is right there inside of you. It's the same teacher Yeshua was guiding people toward 2,000 years ago when he said, you can deny me, but don't deny the one I'm here to connect you with. So there is a something, and again, we try and make up a symbol for it, that if you go of the will to be in trauma and pain, stand in willingness to process out everything that is not like love, then there's a power that you will invite, and she will go to work and undo the effects of your errors, and then you'll get, I mean, very step-by-step specific teaching from time to time. Other times it'll just be a more general inclination toward things. But as you collapse, and that's what forgiveness does, it collapses perception. It collapses that world that you think you see outside of you that isn't outside of you at all. And if there's pain or trauma involved in that world, then the tool with which you collapse your perceptual constructs that tell you that it's all about somebody else, the tool is called forgiveness. Watch things change. It's most amazing. And so that's where we're heading. And if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel. And we'll get to have a conversation. So if you're out there in listener land, we've got about 30 minutes left, lots of time for some great conversation. Push 1. Let's talk about it. How can we support you? What's on your mind?
Michael, two things.
Yes, sweetie.
One, I had gotten an email from someone, and I'm trying to find it right here. Okay. He's part of the book club, and he said, I hope you're both well. First of all, thanks for attending the book club. It's so easy to point fingers at external things and other people when triggered. I heard your message loud and clear on Thursday. My brain is starting to understand and accept that it's always me and mine to deal with. And then he wrote two things. One, that there seemed to be a problem with the app as far as numbers from another country that the app doesn't seem to want to take because they have extra numbers than what we have here. So I've got them looking at that at India to see, you know, what the hang-up is there. And then this is kind of comical. Okay. He had asked at the beginning of the book club if you would sign a book and send it to him and sell it to him. And we told him that we didn't have any. And he says, I ended up with a copy from eBay, and I was amazed to see that it was signed. I've attached some pictures. Although I now have to change my name to Jim, but I'm very grateful because divine intervention couldn't have been happier, even if it had been my name.
That's cool.
So I thought that was cute. And
That's
then we
awesome.
Have a question. From another person.
Great.
It says, the earliest memory that I have was accidentally dumping a pot of hot coffee on my twin brother's lap. Lots of shouting, crying, yelling, and fear. I do not remember a time in my life where I didn't view myself as a perpetual screw-up. This is at odds with my intelligence, my talents, abilities, and drive. I am successful,
right. I hear you.
and then I F things up, very self-destructive. I know I put the blame on others instead of accepting responsibility. I also know that doing the worksheets will aid me in releasing and replacing my false beliefs. Here's the rub. Every time I begin a worksheet, I get bogged down by the shame, regret, and self-loathing. The worksheets seem to be reinforcing the feelings of my perpetual screw-up. What am I doing wrong again?
So here's my offering. And Jeannie, maybe send him back a link or put in the notes today, a link to the shows that you sewed together on healing crisis. So here's what you're doing right. You're engaging in forgiveness. And when you do, you collapse the perception of the moment in on itself, and you give yourself access to the root of that energy. You don't speak about how many years you've been circling the earth, but it sounds like maybe they've been significant. And so notice that original memory, and that's very likely where the core energy is, and or, pardon me, it might go back to something further back. It might be a power person dynamic. You know, you look at mom and dad and see if they lived out of, I always screw things up. And you may be dealing with a genetic implant that needs to be processed through. So what you've done is you've dropped into that place that probably at the age of whatever it was, 3, when you spilled that pot of hot coffee, you dissociated from. And that means that all of the energetic dynamics of that experience that you did not handle consciously, and every experience since that called you to go in and consciously handle that, you're going to step in and process, and it's not Dr. Feelgood. So my offering is you're right on track. If you just said, yep, and I went in and I dealt with that issue and I canceled the goal and now I think everything's just wonderful, I'd say you did something in error. You're not on track here. But you are right on track. You're now stepping into process. And so healing happens on 3 levels, the physical, the mental, and emotional. When you reach a new level of vitality or you pick up an effective tool such as the forgiveness process that collapses the pained perception that you have in on itself, you've now got direct access and must process through the pain. So on a physical level, it's going to feel like any kind of physical symptom you've ever had and low energy. On a mental level, it's going to look like any kind of negative feeling you've ever had and depression. Or pardon me, on an emotional level, it's going to look like any kind of negative feeling. On a mental level, it's going to look like any kind of negative thought. And as you start to tap into those negative thoughts, there may be a tendency to go into depression. And here's the rub, as you say. There's the space for your next worksheet. And then as a result of that, there will be the space for your next worksheet and your next and your next and your next. Each time you do that, you know, I shared earlier about reading those 2 paragraphs, and I would equate your healing crisis, that's what it's called in the system of medicine I'm trained in, I would equate your healing crisis with what I went through each time I would read those 2 paragraphs that I just shared. I would go into an altered state. Now, it wasn't traumatic for me at that point, but I mean, I would just literally, my mind would shift from what I was reading to, I would just go into this totally energetic space. And my take now, looking back at it and realizing that whatever number of months I carried that forward, one day, as I said, I read those 2 paragraphs and it no longer impacted me. It was just words on a page. I was complete with that processing, but it was, and I don't have a measuring stick. I wasn't paying attention to it in a way that I went, oh, this is week 1 doing it, week 2, week, I've been doing it for 3 months. It was months, but I don't know how many. And then one day I was complete with that process. continue to do worksheets around that exact issue that you're talking about. And one day you'll do a worksheet and you'll go, oh, well, why was I ever upset with that? It's gone. It's done. But you don't go through it without going through it. You don't get rid of it without dealing with it. So you've got to approach it directly. And as we've said many times, the healing process is not Dr. Feel Good, but you are right on track, 100% where you should be. Carry on. And how many worksheets might you do? Well, you know, that reply that Yeshua gave 2,000 years ago was 77 times 70. You know, they asked, is 7 times forgiving my brother enough? At least that's the Greek translation. And in Aramaic, he said, no, 77 times 70. Now, 7 in numerology is a number of completion. And 0 is infinity. How many worksheets will you do to complete any given issue that you have in your mind in cleaning it up? You will do an infinite number of worksheets until you're complete with that. And I don't know what that will look like. I mean, I've seen people with core issues like the one you're talking about, years and years and years. I will simply offer that, you know, having developed this work over the last 50 years, my deepest, most important work in terms of my physiology, my life process, the most important work I've done has been done in the last 2 years. Which means I spent 48 years working up to it. Now, a lot of that was developing the brain cells to understand what the heck was going on and to be able to explain it. Well, you're not going to have to waste that time. I'm handing that to you. Here it is. Here's how it works. But you are going to have to go through the processing. And remember, our definition of this work of processing is the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. So keep moving toward active, present love and let all of that garbage spew up. I can remember one of the processes I did, I went to India to do a thing called Kaya Kalpa. And in one three-day period, I actually put on a pair of a blindfold and put in a pair of earplugs. I drank only water, and I went into a three-day space of silence. I didn't speak. I didn't hear. I didn't see. And there was a point in there for me, and again, this is something, you know, I didn't have a clock. I wasn't opening my eyes or looking at anything. But there was a point in that three-day period where my mind went into spewing garbage like a volcano. Just literally, just puking up stuff. And it was just, you know, it was like going into a high-speed, fast-forward process, thank God. I suspect, you know, and I really don't have a way to quantify it, but I suspect that in that 3 days, I probably got the equivalent of years of work done. And that's what it takes to do your work. So you're right on track, and we're here to hold the space. And every question that comes up in doing your work, we're here to support you and provide answers for you. Any thoughts for you, Jeannie, in response to his, any additions, any refinements?
The only thing that I thought of was I actually worked with someone one-on-one the other day. And one of the things that I stressed to her was when you're going through the worksheet and you find the goal and then you cancel the goal, and then the next one asks, you know, after you've canceled the goal and asked Rika to, you know, assist you, then how do you feel or what do you see? And I told her that's not always going to be, you know, neutral or light at the end of the tunnel or happy-go-lucky or wonderful, that sometimes, like, you might be doing a worksheet on, say, fear. And then when you get to the bottom of the worksheet, then what you feel is sadness or maybe even anger, you know, because you might see, oh, my gosh, I've done this 100 times or here we go again. Or, you know, I said it's not always a positive when you get to the bottom of the worksheet, but that's your next worksheet. So that's kind of what you said too. And we do have a hand up. Michael, are you there?
I'd push my mute button while you were talking. Let me just, before we go to our caller, let's just throw in one other thought with this, and I'm speaking now in terms of my own process. And I've shared this several times in the show before, but it fits here as well. And back, if you go back maybe 6 or 8 months ago, I shared an experience that I had while I was doing the Stillpoint session. And to me, this kind of addresses what's really got to be cleaned up. What is the work really about? And I'm doing a Stillpoint session. My eyes are closed. And I had the inclination to mechanically turn my eyes downward and look down. And as I did, what opened up was a vista that was larger than my mind could imagine. It was just like huge blackness, darkness. And there were small little lights, a countless number of lights in this darkness, just small dots of light throughout it. And what happened in that was that it was explained to me, or I came to understand, that these were the unresolved darknesses of my generations, and that each one of them was wanting to come to the light. They were light and wanting to come to the light. And they were asking me if I would process that energy for them. Being here in a structure, having the tools, standing as the presence of love, would I be willing to take on that energy and kind of like be a conduit to process that out of their lives? It was interesting what happened the moment that I verbally spoke out loud to my ancestors, as that request came intuitively, I verbally spoke out loud and said, yes, I am here. I will hold this energy. I will support and I will process this energy with and for you. And literally the instant that I spoke those words out loud, and I usually don't speak during a Stillpoint session, my phone rang and it was my son. And I've never had a conversation with my son about our ancestors. Never. So here I've just said to my ancestors, yes, I will open that space. I will support all of this healing that needs to happen. My phone rings and my son says, hey, Dad, I'm on my computer on ancestry.com, and I've got some questions about some of our ancestors to start to fill this all out. Conversation we'd never had before, and there he was asking about ancestors. Literally the second that I verbally said to my ancestors, yes, I'm here to process that. So, you know, what ultimately is each one who says, oh, I want to be a fully realized being. What's the responsibility of that? What's the work involved? It ain't a job for wimps. And, you know, it's something we're all capable of. So let's go ahead and speak to our caller, sweetie.
It is Martha, 828.
Oh, okay. Hello, young lady.
How are you?
I am rocking. Sounds like how about you, young lady?
Pretty darn good.
We had a blast. We had Aria Rain, and we went off to a jumping house and spent a couple hours with her just bouncing around this place having a ball. So it was a good day yesterday.
I want to go. That sounds like so much fun. Wow.
It was.
I'm doing a very long walk, and I'm in a slow part of it right now, but I'm going to need to speed up pretty soon because I'm doing the intermittent thing or whatever they call it. Anyhow,
okay.
I do want to take a moment, though, to add something to your discussion. With your the email that you received or the message, I just want to say to that person and anyone else who is contemplating beginning to do this work, I believe that with some of us, it can be very frightening. It can bring up our own fear of, oh, my goodness, this is going to be so overwhelming. I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. And And I just want to say, okay, I've been working with Michael's tools, forgiveness tools, for about 12 years now, I guess. So I haven't been at it for 40 years like him. However, what I do know is that every time I do a worksheet, my life gets a little better. And so even though it may be a long time before you get to a point where you feel like, okay, I've dealt with mostly everything, which of course is never true. There's always more. Maybe the big stuff gets out of the way. Anyway, every time you're dealing with that, a load is being lifted from your emotional body, your energy body, and your spiritual body, and your physical body, so that your life just gets better and better. Even though a worksheet may turn out like Jeannie said, where at the bottom of it you go, oh, I don't feel any better now. And of course that does mean, okay, you have another worksheet to do on something that came up here and was revealed in this worksheet. However, on the whole, you're going to be going in an upward trajectory. So I just want to encourage people that it's all good. That's what I had to add.
That is a powerful addition. That's awesome. And, you know, I'm thinking as you speak about that, the energy that's moving in our small Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing group and how powerful that support space is.
Yes.
When we're working with other people who are working at that same level, it's like a synergistic effect that moves everybody forward. So,
absolutely, it does. I'm looking forward to this Saturday, and I'm gonna.
So am I.
I'm gonna get back to my walking because it's time for me to speed up. Okay.
All right, young lady. Be blessed.
Love you.
We'll see you Saturday.
Thank you.
All right.
Uh huh.
Okay. Bye bye. Bye
bye.
Something I thought of, and it's basically what she was saying, but if you have a visual of, like, you know, just little humps, ups and downs and ups and downs, like a wave, and so your life before the work, you know, had all these ups and downs. Well, now you've got those ups and downs too, except instead of drawing that wave horizontally, draw it diagonally, like from corner to corner, so your downs are actually higher than your previous ups. Does that make sense? Probably
absolutely
not. I'm seeing
that's
the visual
exactly
of it.
No, you're right. No, you're saying it exactly so. It's like the up and down is going on the vertical rather than just running along. You know, somebody who doesn't do their work has a down, and, you know, it's a minus 200. And 50 years from now, their downs will still be at a minus 200, or if they're still doing the drama again, they might be at a minus 300. Someone who's doing their work, they're down maybe a 200 right now. If they're doing their work in 50 years and they have a down, their down is 80. Their down is 20. So you're right on. That's it exactly. And for anyone who's
go ahead
ready to take their work to the next level, we do have the next session. We do a monthly Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, which Mind is a part of. That's what we're talking about. And so if you'd like to join us for that, you can join us for just one session, or you can sign up for three sessions, or you can do a year-long commitment to it. And if you want to try it out, you can try it for 1 month. And if you decide to expand it, you can always expand that 1 month out to 3 months or to 6 months, or to a year. So depending where you're at. And the power of a group of people coming together who have the brain cells and are doing the work individually and are there for each other and doing it collectively just takes everything to a whole different level. So if you're interested in joining us for that, drop me a line or drop Jeannie a line. Give us your name and phone number. Her email is jeanie@whyagain.org. So Jeannie@whyagain.org. and make sure you leave a phone number. And we'll get you set up to join us Saturday. It'll be at 11 o'clock Eastern time. It'll probably go from 11 until sometime between 1 and 2. Probably that'll be about the time frame on Saturday. We've got a small group. And then on Tuesday night from 7 until we're complete. On Tuesday, that usually runs by 8:30 or 9 o'clock on Tuesday. So if you're interested in joining us, drop us a note. Come play. And it looks like we've got about 10 minutes left. So we need anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Well, actually, including the outro, we've only got 7 minutes. So somebody press one. We've got time for a question. And in the notes for today, I have included the Course in Miracles 164, which is your open the curtain and you're practicing. And also included the other one that you said, it would indeed be strange if you were asked to take, to go beyond all symbols of the world. That one is from lesson 184, the name of God is my inheritance, paragraph 9 and 10. So, and I've also included a link to the What is the World YouTube, and it's 39 minutes long. So all those links are in today's notes, as well as the links to the PDF for the healing crisis. And then there's like 5 different links to MP3s of shows where we've discussed different parts. And we just had a hand go up. So area
cool.
code 610, you're on the air. I believe this is Susan.
Hi. Hi, guys. This
hey,
is
young
great.
Lady.
And hi. Michael, I wanted to ask you, you had that vision or that experience of lowering your eyes during the still point and seeing the points of light and you agreeing to do it, do the work. Has that changed how or the amount or the kinds of work you're doing?
Well, you know, it's hard to quantify, but what I've found is that another level of my intuition has opened, another level of, you know, oftentimes Jeannie will, Michael, what are you doing? It's 3:30 in the morning. I always have my phone in reach on airplane mode, so it's not putting on any energy while we sleep, but I'll, at 3 in the morning, usually between 3 and 4, I'll wake up with the download, and I'm making notes. So that happens often enough that actually sometimes now I try to quietly get up. It's almost impossible to get up without Jeannie waking up, unfortunately. But I try to go up and do my download out in the front room rather than from the side of the bed. So, but that's become more, for me, a more common experience since that opening over the period of the last year and a half, 2 years.
And it was a year and a half or so that you had that vision?
No, that was only about 6 or maybe 8 months ago, something like that.
Yeah,
that
I thought that was about when, right. So
yeah. No.
Are you getting communications from any specific ancestors or anything like that?
No. No, I haven't gotten any, you know, Great Uncle Charlie or what have you. There hasn't been anything like that.
Mm.
I'd be willing.
Yeah.
But that hasn't been the case yet.
I was wondering, because when you both got COVID and you kept saying, I'm getting upgrades, upgrades, upgrades. I was wondering if some of those upgrades were because of that vision. And then you were weakened enough in a certain way that you might have been more receptive to input.
Yeah, I'm thinking that in terms of timing, the COVID came along a couple of months after I had that opening, that experience. And
right. And you kept saying,
was definitely
wow, you know, I got sick, but I'm getting this and I'm getting that. And we're growing so much that it was like a blessing, which let's hope everything is, including all that's going on in the world. Let's hope that we just can't see the blessing that's being given us in spite of what we think we're seeing.
Right. And, you know, it's so clear to me now, you know, what, 4 months or so out from COVID, that COVID was a major gift for both of us.
Mm.
It was a major upgrade in health and clarity for both of us. You know, when I think that prior to COVID, there'd never been a day in my life where there wasn't at least some sort of a wheeze in my lungs. And because of my lung history, I was definitely, you know,
right,
in the, what they call age range I'm in, I was definitely on the list for death from COVID. And because of lungs. And it's totally cleared my lungs, wheeze-free for the first time in my life. So definitely was a gift.
Were you afraid?
And for me, the difference is when an energy comes in, whatever quality it has, am I going to deal with it unconsciously? Am I going to just sink into the generational patterns of pain and trauma and hate and fear and rage? And if I do, I don't believe that COVID has killed anybody. But I believe that what COVID has aroused in people that they've spent their lives trying to avoid, that the activation of that which had been hidden from them is what killed them. It was the qualities of energy they carried around within themselves that created death. It wasn't the virus. The virus was the trigger to bring the hidden up. And I think if anyone's ready to process and deal with the hidden, when it starts to move, then they're going to get a health upgrade out of it. They're going to get a gift out of it.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And
well, I have,
and I say this,
go ahead.
I say this kind of tongue in cheek, but not really. I've actually considered, since having that round of COVID and the positive changes that occurred, I've considered going out and finding somebody with COVID and, hey, come cough in my face. I've considered it.
Yeah.
I've chosen against it. You know, when I think about doing that, the thought comes from the scriptures of, tempt not the Lord your God. It's like, okay, I got it. But I've considered it.
Right. My question, too, was I have several friends who have, like you, the lung business. One has had so much Lyme disease and after effects from Lyme. She was afraid to get the vaccination. And another friend who has a condition that woman with the Will Smith thing, she has no hair. And her immune system is delicate. And she...
Right.
Has avoided it too. Is that one of the reasons you didn't want to get a vaccination, or is it just your general feeling that the body is healthy? If you're doing your work, you won't get sick.
Yeah, I'm a naturopath, and so a naturopath has a perspective of we have an immune system, and part of the process of life is to take care of your immunity. We live in a culture that says, well, you can't have immunity unless you have our little thing in your arm or what have you. And it then goes on to teach us to totally ignore what it takes to support immunity. Eat all the garbage you want. Eat the junk oils. Eat all the dead flesh that you want. You know, live in rage and guilt and grief and fear and blame and hostility. And all you'll need is this to upgrade you. Well, those are all things that destroy immunity. And so... that's the reason I chose not to do it. And the show's going to cut us off in a moment or so, but we'll carry on with our conversation until it just quits on us.
Right.
So that's my take.
Thanks.
And, you know, the willingness to do the work to embrace whatever moves, the good, the bad, and the ugly, is what's required.